This is the Poetry Magazine podcast. I'm Don Scher, editor of Poetry Magazine.
And I'm Lindsay Garbutt, associate editor. On the Poetry Magazine podcast, we discuss a poem or two in the current issue.
Ed Roberson is the author of numerous books of poetry, including To See the Earth Before the End of the World.
The June issue of Poetry features a series of sonnets by Roberson, inspired by Pablo Neruda's 20 love poems and a song of despair.
I remember liking that sequence and thinking, well, I could do 20 architecture poems.
Roberson studied painting in his youth. The visual arts still inform much of his work today. And before becoming a poet, he almost became an architect.
I wanted to be a painter, but people were telling me that black folks couldn't be painters, you know, fine arts painters. They kept trying to send me to graphics classes or advertising, but I wanted to do fine art. But then when I couldn't get training in fine art, I thought about, well, maybe I could be an architect.
Born and raised in Pittsburgh, Roberson moved to Chicago 15 years ago. He never became an architect, but his architectural research came in handy in some surprising ways, specifically a paper he'd written on the architecture firm Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill.
And when I moved to Chicago, I was looking for a place to stay. And I had asked a bunch of people, you know, where to look. And everyone said, oh, don't go to the South Side. So typical me, first thing I did was rent a car and drove down the South Side to see what I wasn't supposed to go and see. And as I was driving down King Drive, I looked to the left and there was this building. I thought I recognized it. So I drove over, and sure enough, it was the building I had done the paper on. So I just walked in and rented the place. I didn't even hunt for an apartment in Chicago. It was right there. And I'd been there for 15 years. I love it.
The poems in Roberson's series all focus on architectural sites in Chicago.
People pointed out to me that the poems are still very visual, and I like that comment. I mean, I like that people pick that up. That I'm still a painter, or still a draftsman.
Here's Ed Roberson reading from the series Architectonis, 20 for the Chicago Architecture Center. The series starts with an epigraph by Sir William Hamilton.
That science which treats of those conditions of knowledge which lie in the nature not of thought itself, but of that which we think about, has been called architectonic. Insofar as it treats of the method of building up our observations into system. And my response is one of which systems is a poem. The first poem, What the Chicago Window Was For. Mainly light, the supporting function on the sides opens to let in air. The proportions, wall to door, dependent on heat. Repeated upward into cold, wind around the columns and garland sky high. Reflections off the face of their investment. The blueprint raises money longer, hours. Profit piles up. The American beauty. Of work, yourself to death to look out on. Two, Otis. Railroad architecture ran elevators off the ground to get weight it needed up, like people off land to get over. Then an elevator, railroad, floated architecture up floors, open as planes to the sky. Through walls into rooms coupled like cars, to each other without a climb, hallway distances like vistas through zigzag mountain valleys as work's landscape. The first time since walking sheep in the cloud meadows far away from the later smoke. The elevators laid more meadow out than the mountain had basis for. Its little square created anchorage out of air. More then the fiery iron horse, the hidden legs spider wove worlds more tightly into her realm of feeding upon, more needed immediately. She trained her fare into catching her by waiting for her to swallow the fat ride she needed to keep her moving. And moving faster with no feeling of movement, she has architecture anesthetized to no other way. As long as there is up, it will feed her with it. She has learned how to go streetwise through airports. She tells you when the moving walkway is ending. 3, the rookery. The rookery was built out of birds, which were actually individual flames, not really. Birds with fiery plumage, they stood out against the masonry of black smoke, all that survived the fire. I have this experiential thing about fire that makes me crazy. At even the thought of it, I X out. So the idea of the city having only this place for birds to land after took me a long time to visit. The difference between locate, identify, know something about, and visit, re-experience, identify with, is in if the roofs that became return call back a sky. Unclear how much what's left tells that much about what has been lost enough to nest its shard against which tomorrow lies best, living its death until death is shown the lie. It lives into life. It stirs. Nothing suddenly. More, the politicking of birds found a place to buy and sell. The audacity to have survived as the architectonic of a city.
That connection between architecture and poetry is really fascinating in these poems. And in a way, they connect back with some of the earliest Chicago poems there ever were. Carl Sandburg's Skyscraper, for instance, that Chicago always was a kind of nexus for architecture, somewhat off the human scale. And then, of course, at its core, like architecture poetry is a way, as the epigraph says, building up our observations into system. And beyond that, what I think I like the most about these endlessly intriguing poems is their resemblance to another great Midwestern poet, Laureen Niedecker. There's sort of a sturdy, insistent concision in these poems where even though there are sort of spaces between words and thoughts, they allow so much in. You sort of build a lot of your own thoughts around both what is and isn't in these poems. The series kicks off with a great insight to me, you know, what the Chicago window is for. If you think of these skyscrapers and all the windows, I mean, I think the way we look at cities, we think there's like, where's the illumination here? And of course, it's sort of the startlingly obvious initial principle that the reason why these buildings climbed up into the sky and let in light, it was meant to be an astounding human achievement. What the Chicago window is for, mainly light, but not only light. Mm-hmm. But then that first section kind of expands into, you know, imagining the supporting function on the sides, you know, opens to let in air, the proportions and principles of construction here really are unusual, but they help sort of reclaim and humanize things about the city that I think for 100 years we've kind of consigned to kind of a negative way of thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, even when Ed Roberson is talking about going to look at the stuff that he wasn't supposed to look at, that to me is sort of another principle of the poetics here. Mm-hmm. You know, what's another way to look at this stuff to understand why it was built this way and how it functions?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the idea that to write a love poem to Chicago would be to write about its architecture, you know, drawing on that Neruda sequence, he decided to make it 20 for the Chicago Architecture Center, making each individual poem both love and despair in one, I feel like. So the fact that this first poem is sort of about light, as you were saying, but ends in a really dark place about how the view you get from these tall buildings is the American beauty, but that beauty is of working yourself to death,
yeah.
That you think it's going to be this really sort of romanticized view, and instead it's very realistic and dire. And the way that Ed Roberson sort of marries these two things throughout the sequence is really wonderful, I think. And as he was talking about in his introduction, that he makes the poems sort of their own architecture, that they're built differently for each sequence. So the Chicago window section has this sort of alternating lines that are stacked on top of each other like a skyscraper, but also these gaps within it that sort of let light in or let in some air to the poem itself. I also love that the poems are not necessarily about buildings in particular. So that poem was about windows, and the next poem is about the Otis Elevator Company, which obviously made the architecture possible that we have. You couldn't have a skyscraper if people had to walk all the way to the top.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something I would think of as a conventional subject for a poem.
It's great that it happened so early in the sequence, because as you say, you know, none of this would be possible without that idea that something could move people to places they couldn't get to otherwise, which was a sort of animating, you know, focus of our technology in the late 1900s and all through the 20th century. So that this section number two, Otis, is about the movement of people ultimately. There is sort of a gap between its two stanzas. The first one is really interesting, talking about railroad architecture, you know, ran elevators off the ground to get weight it needed up, like people off land to get over, like all the prepositions there. And it's interesting that in a way, part of what he's describing is you need this kind of elevating architecture before the people can inhabit it. And what I sort of noticed, because they're building a gigantic couple of buildings right around the corner here, is that when they tear something down in a place like Chicago, the last thing in the building is the elevator shaft that's sort of at the core, and it comes down kind of near the end sometimes. And yet one of the first things you have to construct is that core in the middle where there will be elevators. You can watch as they construct, you know. I think we think of scaffolding and stuff like that, which there is, but actually you're seeing, it's almost like buildings pull themselves up. Somehow. And that section of the poem is really describing that. Although the second part of it is very strange about the sort of incorporates the spider, which has a very different way of building things than we do.
Well, and the poem both builds up through that first stanza that's about the elevators making acreage out of air, which is just a really beautiful phrase. And obviously Chicago was built on a prairie. So the idea that humans were making the prairie move upwards instead of just across. But then the second stanza ends with, she has learned how to go streetwise through airports. She tells you when the moving walkway is ending. So like, I hadn't known that Otis, in addition to doing elevators, does moving walkways. And that's sort of a famous catchphrase of Chicago, the moving walkway is ending. You hear it in O'Hare as soon as you land or right before you leave. And so I love that these two sort of modes of movement and transportation have been married together in this poem. And what you were saying about, you know, buildings being torn down and being built up, I feel like the third poem really gets at that with the rookery, which was, I guess apparently it was originally City Hall was there and it was burned down by the fire. And then they built this intermediary building that birds all flock to. And so they nicknamed it the rookery, which is, you know, what Chicagoans do. We like call things by names other than what they are, like the bean.
Or
the loop. Yeah, all kinds of things. And so the fact that this poem sort of pays tribute to how we build over and on top of and again and sort of call our buildings by different names, I think is really beautifully done.
Well, the other aspect of the rookery and in Chicago to this very day is what he calls the politicking of birds. That positioning, I mean, he often has, whether, you know, there's the spider and the birds and so on, there's often like a positioning of creatures in the urban environment, which is a kind of form of politics, like where you congregate and where the impetus comes from. The politicking of birds, I mean, in a lot of ways, this is, it's very wry, but it's quite funny as well. I mean, I don't think it's supposed to be a comedy exactly. But for instance, at the end of this third poem, well, the brilliant rhyme of audacity and city, and audacity includes city in it. I mean, again, going back to Niedecker, his compression is astounding to me because everything contains everything else in these poems. And it's ingenious. They're like reading blueprints of the city before it actually comes into existence.
Mm-hmm. And also blueprints of its history, too. I think there's a later poem that's about the Mecca, which is, you know, famous because of Gwendolyn Brooks's In the Mecca, which is a building that no longer exists, but Ed still wrote about it to just sort of incorporate the history of the buildings that have been in Chicago that are no longer there and the histories that are sort of underneath the buildings that we all know and think we know.
You can read Architectonis 20 for the Chicago Architecture Center by Ed Roberson in the June 2019 issue of Poetry Magazine or online at poetrymagazine.org.
We'll have another episode for you next week where you can get all June episodes all at once in the full-length podcast on SoundCloud. Let us know what you thought of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org and please link to the podcast on social media.
The Poetry Magazine podcast is recorded by Ed Herman and produced by Rachel James.
The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. I'm Lindsay Garbutt.
And I'm Don Scher. Thanks for listening.
If you like the Poetry Magazine podcast, check out Verses, also presented by the Poetry Foundation.
What do Crowns of Sonnets, High School, and the Apocalypse have in common?
They've all been topics of conversation on the Webby-nominated podcast, Verses.
Listen to poets Franny Choi and Dinez Smith talk to some of the brightest lights in contemporary poetry.
Check out Verses, presented by the Poetry Foundation and Post Loudness on poetryfoundation.org/podcasts. And subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and SoundCloud.